not coming back for 30%. I'm coming back for everything.
You got into Harvard Law?
What, like it's hard?
Scarface on repeat. Scarface on repeat. Constant, y'all.
Catch a painted pony on the spinning wheel ride.
Some people are saying that your new music sounds a lot like Bob Dylan.
Well, maybe Bob Dylan sounds a lot like me.
She doesn't even go here. They knew, and they let it happen.
Oh, and in case I don't see you.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Hello, 94.9 Radio Western. You are tuned in to Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show. My name is Elijah.
I'm General Booty.
And we are Outside the Frame. We talk about film, the culture that surrounds it, so on and so forth. A couple things, little housekeeping things to take care of. First and foremost, we are not joined by Mike today. Mike is still at TIFF. So he's our on-the-ground reporter.
Oh, he's at TIFF.
I know. And he's going to get back in here next week and tell us about how just how painstakingly difficult it is to see all these movies. And to be fair, just to give Mike some credit, from what he's told me before, it actually is quite a long process and quite a tiring process. There's a lot of movies he's got to see.
And the screenings always fill up.
Oh, so you have to be up at like 5 o'clock in the morning to get your tickets.
Yep.
You have to show up early to get there, to get your seats. It's just a...
But you know, for real hustlers like Mike, it's no big deal.
He does this in his sleep, you know? He's been doing this for years. He's got this. So shout out to you, Mike.
You could wake him up in a drunken stupor and he could still do it.
Exactly. Like he was the soberest man you've ever met.
Yes.
So Mike will be back next week where he'll be talking about some of his TIFF adventures and what movies he's seen, what he's looking forward to. We'll be doing a bit of a fall, a fall movie watch list, like a fall movie festival recap.
Yes, okay.
Of what's been happening so far at these festivals and what we're looking forward to in the fall. But that is about next week, so we'll get to that as well. We are also on streaming services now. So.
That is true.
We are on streaming services. If you go to anywhere you stream your podcasts, if you go to, Spotify, if you go to Apple Podcasts, if you go to CastBox, we're there. So all you have to do is look up Outside the Frame.
And I didn't even know CastBox was a thing.
There you go. I did because I was uploading our episodes to it.
There you go.
So we are on. So if you do miss the episode, it will be up. If you don't catch it live, it'll be up on streaming services on Wednesday, the following day. And you know what? That's really all I've got to say for housekeeping. Is there anything that you need to add?
No, we do have a trivia night coming up on September 23rd, though, at the Holy Diver.
Thank you for bringing that up. We sure do. At the Holy Diver, and it is Tuesday, September 23rd, we will be doing a trivia night at the Holy Diver, a movie trivia night, every single Tuesday.
Not every single Tuesday, one Tuesday a month.
You're right. One Tuesday every single month up until... I believe April will be our last one because it's while the students are here.
Yep, exactly. Okay. Yep.
And I guess final thing to say is if you are listening to this live on Radio Western, feel free to call or text. And by call or text, I mean just text us 519-661-3600. That is 519-661-3600. And let's just get into our episode for today. Ryan, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about a very specific genre of films coming out. Obviously, this is due to the release of a certain sequel, but we are talking about mockumentaries.
That is absolutely correct. So we are talking about mockumentaries, and more specifically today, I thought it would be interesting if we did a what I've called the decade-defining picks.
Right.
So obviously, the format and the genre of mockumentaries has been going on for quite a long time. From my research, it dates back to about the 60s. The late 60s is the first instance that we've ever seen of this. However, the more we go on, the more iconic they become and the more commonplace we start to see some of these mockumentaries. Now, it'll coincide with the release of This is Spinal Tap 2 that comes out this Friday, the sequel to the iconic movie This is Spinal Tap that came out in 84.
I totally forgot that Chuck from Better Call Saul was in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people I forgot were in
it.
For some reason, even though it's like a small cameo role, totally forgot Billy Crystal was in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's bizarre.
I'm telling you. Like, there's a lot, there is quite a few, and we'll get into,
right.
We will get into that that conversation about Spinal Tap later on. But how do you feel about mockumentaries in general?
I love a good mockumentary.
Yeah.
Me personally, I watch a lot of documentaries as well, just like normal kind of straight up documentaries. And so when I see a mockumentary, it is quite enticing to me because it's taking a format that I really like and it's just spoofing everything about it. And it's quite funny. And I think there is an interesting way of, you know, showcasing things in a mockumentary that you couldn't necessarily get away with in a straightforward narrative film.
Especially when in comedies, there's a very there's a very easy way to play into the real life nature of what they're trying to encapsulate in a mockumentary, because it's supposed to be, you know, obviously a documentary. So being able to play on the fact that everyone believes that this is real and that these are real characters in their real lives, there's a lot of clever things that they can play with.
You're more observant during a mockumentary or a documentary, but what a mockumentary allows is, because you're more observant because of the format, you see, especially in a comedic sense, you see how ridiculous it is of the reality it's trying to portray.
And it's very immersive, too, because it's it's a lot easier to suspend your disbelief when you're watching something that is, quote unquote, supposed to be real.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Other than not. So it is a very interesting format, and I do also tend to enjoy these, especially in the comedy format. I know that recently, I mean, we'll get into what mockumentaries have kind of turned into recently and how they've been influenced by other mockumentary films. We won't dive too much into TV shows because this is a movie podcast or a movie. A movie podcast.
If you're looking for The Office, go somewhere else.
Go somewhere else. We're not here to talk about, even though some of the films on our list later on will probably have gotten some inspiration from that.
Oh, yes.
We're not talking about it.
Yep.
So sorry. Go somewhere else. But without further ado, shall we get started?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the first... You know, we're not going to choose any defining picks from the first couple of decades because, or at least the first one that really is the inception.
Right.
So doing my research, I found these are two movies that I have not seen before, but they're the two first examples that I could find of mockumentary films. So the first recorded example of a mockumentary, is the film, and it's called David Holtzman's Diary. It's from 1967.
Not a clue.
It's written and directed by James McBride, and it's a documentary just about a fictional character, just a random guy going through his day.
Okay.
It's very odd. There's not much description about this movie. It's hard to find, so I have not seen it, but it is the first recorded example of a mockumentary.
Mm-hmm.
So not much to say there. The second case, though, and probably the most popular, like the first popular use of it, of a mockumentary, is a 1969 movie called Take the Money and Run, written and directed by Woody Allen. And it's actually his second directorial effort. Yeah. Written and directed by him. It's about a documentary crew that films an inept bank robber. He plays the inept bank robber.
Nice. Okay.
So very interesting that he decided to take something like this on so early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was 69, so this was pre... Hannah and her sisters, pre Woody Allen, Annie Hall.
Yeah, pre Manhattan.
So all before all of, you know, the Woody Allen, before he became Woody Allen.
Yes.
There's a few examples in the 70s as well, but none that were as popular as these two, or at least in my opinion, as noteworthy as these two. So that brings us to the 80s.
And
we get to bring our first decade defining pick of the 80s. So
have a clip of this one too.
We sure do.
Have a clip of this film, and we promise this time, you know, in previous episodes the clips haven't worked.
They have not worked. Yeah, last week's they did not work.
The clips are going to work this time.
I hope they do. I mean, I'd be kind of shocked if they didn't this time. I think that the reason was because we had Sam on FaceTime.
That is true.
Last time, but we certainly have a clip. So let's play the clip from our decade defining pick of the 80s, which has to undoubtedly, undubitably go to This Is Spinal Tap.
Look at that one. This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
The iconic line.
The iconic line.
Up
These
to 11.
Go to 11.
These go to 11. This movie, this is Spinal Tap, 1984.
Yeah.
Directed by and starring Rob Reiner.
Yep.
Written by Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, and Harry Shearer. Harry Shearer.
Whatever you say is fine.
Also stars all three of them
yep.
as three of the main band members for Spinal Tap. It also stars people, as we were saying earlier, Fran Drescher, Dana Carvey, Billy Crystal, Angelica Houston, Paul Schaefer, a lot of people.
And shout out Rob Reiner though.
Shout out to Rob Reiner. The run he was on, I know we've
crazy
actually
run.
We've talked about that before, I believe, because Mike of outside the frame fame is a huge
the show that we're currently on.
That is correct. Yeah,
yes.
he's mentioned before on the show that he's a huge fan of runs, quote unquote runs. Which is, you know, for anybody who might not know, is just when someone, just one after the other, comes out with just absolute heat. So listen to this run. And it's actually the start of his run.
Okay.
So this is the first, like, actual release that isn't a TV movie.
Okay.
This is Spinal Tap. First directorial debut.
Okay.
For a you know, a theatrical movie. He does have the Sure Thing in there, which is a bit interesting. But then after that, it's Stand By Me. The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, and A Few Good Men.
That's a crazy run.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable run by Rob there.
Yeah. Now, to be fair,
shout out to Rob.
I have not seen The Sure Thing, but I mean, I've heard good things about it, and I'm sure it is good.
Listen, it's a sophomore slump. We all go through it.
But that's the thing. I believe it's pretty widely, like, well received.
Yeah.
So it's just not this is Spinal Tap or Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, so on forth, right? So this is Spinal Tap. It obviously follows a fictional band called Spinal Tap, and it's during one of their iconic tours. This might be the pinnacle. And that's why it has to, why is it our decade-defining pick? Because it's the pinnacle of mockumentary filmmaking.
Absolutely.
I mean, it also might just be one of the funniest movies ever made.
Yes.
I think for
it has
for
really
my
funny
opinion,
moments.
So it's got some great, obviously up to 11.
Yeah.
There's a great running bit throughout the whole movie about Stonehenge, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I think near the beginning, there's a bit about sandwiches.
Right.
And one of the members trying to assemble a sandwich with small bread. It's just so many great bits in this about how, and satirizing how serious rock stars and rock bands took themselves at this point.
Especially with, there's so many, you know, classic rock documentaries that start from the late 60s into the 80s, where everyone's taking themselves so seriously all the time. And then this is exactly what a mockumentary can do perfectly. It's poke fun at that reality a little bit.
One of the documentaries that it was... You know, that was a huge inspiration point, at least according to Rob Reiner, was, funny enough, was The Last Waltz.
Oh, that's really funny.
That is really funny. And, oddly enough, we ended up doing a screening of The Last Waltz as our Rock the Highland series with Highland Cinema this past summer. So it's funny because I had watched This is Spinal Tap before, and, you know, I didn't know that The Last Waltz was a source of inspiration. So that was the Rock the Highland series was the first time I had seen The Last Waltz.
Right.
So seeing it, thinking back to that in retrospect and seeing how it was played in The Last Waltz and then thinking back to Spinal Tap now, the similarities, I am picking up on them. And mm-hmm. it is quite interesting that was a discussion point for them while making the movie.
Yes, it's a documentary about people on various substances trying to say very serious things.
Yeah, exactly. This movie also absolutely becomes the source of inspiration for all music mockumentaries that were that would follow
this. Right.
And there are a few. Maybe not every mockumentary, but definitely if there's a music mockumentary after this, it is almost certainly, you know, this is the blueprint.
Yes, yeah.
And that's why it's got to be our decade-defining pick. Do you have anything else to say about this Spinal Tap?
No, no, I do not.
Okay.
But I think it's, I mean, clearly it's the pick for the 1980s. If you haven't seen it, I would go check it out, though.
Yeah, if you haven't seen This Is Spinal Tap, please, for the love of God, go watch This Is Spinal Tap.
Especially if you're like a classic rock fan.
Yeah.
You should probably watch it.
One funny bit that I was doing when I was doing my research, there's a bunch of bands that did watch the movie when it, upon its release.
Right.
And they did find it pretty humorous, and they were saying like, oh, like we you know, that's so funny. Like, we've also gotten lost all the time in backstage, like in the backstage hallways, like it's, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
One band that didn't find it funny or didn't find the humor in it was Aerosmith.
That makes it even funnier.
And when they were quoted saying that, their following album, I can't remember the title of it, but it actually, the cover art was of Stonehenge. Just funny how things, just funny how that works out.
That is funny.
Some other, this had to be our decade-defining pick for the 80s, because also, not only is this just, again, the pinnacle of mockumentary filmmaking, but there's also not a lot of other movies from the 80s.
That are mockumentaries.
The only two that I could find that I thought were kind of noteworthy were two TV movies. So movies made for TV. One called, they both came out in 85. And one is called The Last Polka, and the other is called The Canadian Conspiracy. So
that seems fun.
The Last Polka stars John Candy and Eugene Levy.
Okay,
and they're
right.
A fake band called the Schmenge Brothers.
This actually, I believe this is based on something that they did on SCTV.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, right.
I have
heard of this bit. I've seen it online. Like, the skit's not the movie, though.
Right. Well, they did make a full-length feature film about
okay.
it.
Yeah.
And then the other one is The Canadian Conspiracy, which also stars John Candy. But this one is about Canada's covert attempt to take over American media.
That's really funny.
So very interesting dynamics at play there. Both Canadian. It's just interesting that
Eugene Levy is going to come up quite often in this show today.
Yes, he will. And you know what? Obviously, This Is Spinal Tap, the lead guitarist played by Christopher Guest, also written by him. We're gonna be hearing a lot from him because he kind of becomes a staple in mockumentary filmmaking going forward. But you know, at this point, I guess we can move on to the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is quite a bit to talk about in the 90s, especially in the 2000s.
Yes,
so those are
going to
take up a lot of our time. The 90s is where things start to pick up a little bit.
Yes.
I wouldn't say it's like the heaviest in terms of how many there are. I'd say that we get there a little bit later. But the 90s, there are some really solid picks. The decade-defining pick. Here's the thing is, I know we talked about this off-air, but now I'm kind of stuck between three.
There's a tie for... Okay.
Yeah, so let's talk this one out, okay?
Okay, so I feel like I know what one of them is, and I know... Actually, I think I know what two of them are.
Yes, you do know what two of them are, I believe.
Okay.
So one of them is a movie called Man Bites Dog.
Right. Can you explain this to the... So I haven't seen this, but I do know of it, and you've explained it to me.
Of course.
Maybe explain it to the listeners.
So this movie is written and directed by three people, and I apologize if I get your names wrong. It is... Rémi Bellevaux, André Bonzel, and Benoît Poelvoorde.
This sounded good.
Thank you. I tried my best.
Yeah.
I tried my best. I did speak French for a bit, and this is a Belgian
film. Can't roll my R, so I would have butchered that.
Okay, well, that's why we got the French immersion kit here. So this movie is about a documentary crew who follow a man as he goes about his daily routine as a serial killer. So it's a pitch black comedy, dark comedy. So eventually the camera crew become less objective about their subject and begin to actually get involved in the killings. This movie is actually quite disturbing levels.
Right.
It's a very funny concept. It's a great concept for a movie. This movie won Best First Feature and the Special Youth Award at the Cannes Film Festival year that it premiered. And it actually it's been included in the Criterion Collection.
Oh, that's cool.
You can get a Criterion version of this film. I think that the reason this one should at least be in the discussion is because I think it has a lot to say. You know, it's not just, you know, and I don't mean to downplay other mockumentaries that come into play here. But this one does have a lot to talk about in terms of its satirizing a camera crew that feels like a serial killer should be the main point of, you know, this really dumb guy. Like he's really not smart, but he's just a very violent and racist and misogynistic figure. But they find him so entertaining and they follow him along. And in turn, they actually end up doing that, which
again, there is. And also there, it is poking fun at an issue with documentaries.
It's
the fact that in some sense documentary filmmaking, documentary crews can become almost complicent in what they're shooting.
100%, 100%. And you know, to further that point, you know, it can also, you could make the same comment about exploitation.
Yes.
And you know, true crime shows, true crime movies,
right,
talking about a real life serial killer and not taking a very tasteful approach to how you're actually going to portray your subject.
Right.
And then again, like you said, becoming complicit in that.
Yeah.
You could even talk about what it has to say about, you know, entertainment in general and how we will platform the most vile people just because they're entertaining and because we kind of enjoy seeing them. And what we actually deem as entertainment, if it is violence, if we watch, you know, what might pop up on your Instagram feed, what might pop up more so on your X feed, most likely, because that is just the wild, wild west, maybe right. Reddit feed.
Right.
And so for that, for how prescient this movie is, I think that that is worth a discussion in and of itself.
Right, 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 right.
Now, I don't know if I could ever recommend this movie because of how disturbing it gets and how, again, I mentioned earlier, you have to, you know, mockumentaries kind of help in immersing yourself in a movie because you don't have to suspend your disbelief as much.
Right.
So when you're watching the vile things that this person does, it gets a little, you feel a little uneasy.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly. But I mean, I hesitate to say a great movie, but a very important movie for sure. It's also one of Steve Buscemi's favorites. So there's a little trivia on that
nice.
One. Quentin Tarantino also really loved
Steve
it.
Steve Buscemi, the New York City firefighter?
That is correct. Okay. Yes, the volunteer firefighter.
And Quentin Tarantino, the video store clerk?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Of Four Rooms fame?
Yes. Quentin Tarantino, Four Rooms fame.
That Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. So for that alone, I feel like it should be at least in the discussion. We can kind of come back to that one. The other one that I would like to talk about is called Bob Roberts.
Okay.
I don't have too much to say about this one. This one was written and directed by Tim Robbins.
Oh, cool.
And so it's about the titular character, Bob Roberts, who is a conservative celebrity and who runs for U.S. Senate.
Oh, that's fun.
So, again, another reason, because of how ahead of the curve it was, I think that that's a strong enough reason for it to at least be considered. But this one also starred Alan Rickman, Giancarlo Esposito, Helen Hunt, James Spader, Gore Vidal, a stacked cast in this one, but kind of flies under the radar. That one came out in 92, the same year as Man Bites Dog. But then there's the other pick that we do have a clip for.
We do have an audio clip for.
We do have an audio clip for. And this is where we really get to see Christopher Guest again.
Yes.
Taking kind of what he learned in This Is Spinal Tap and applying it to his first directorial attempt at a mockumentary, and that is the 1996 movie Waiting for Guffman.
Floating like a vapor on the soft summer air.
That was very good. Well, thank you, Dr. Pearl.
Well, thank
you. Wow.
So that was Eugene Levy as Dr. Pearl auditioning for the community theater project.
Yes. Have you seen Waiting for Guffman?
I've seen clips of it. I have not seen the whole way through, but I do know what Waiting for Guffman is about. Yes.
Yeah. It's about, just like as much as you can sum it up, it's about a mockumentary. It's a mockumentary about a small town in Missouri.
Right.
And they're putting on a musical to celebrate their 150th anniversary, I believe it is.
Yes.
As a town. And then they find out a Broadway star is coming. And
who's trying to kind of make his debut again, maybe thinking that this could launch his career.
Yeah. It's it's a very interesting film, and it sets the course for what becomes a pretty good string, a pretty great string of movies from Christopher Guest. Of these three, do you have one that you're kind of leaning more towards? I personally, just for my money, I think Man Bites Dog.
We can go with Man Bites Dog.
You want to go with Man Bites
Dog? Let's go with Man Bites Dog. I will want to say with Waiting for Guffman, a great Parker Posey performance in that film.
Oh, we're going to get to also...
And she shows up a lot in these mockumentaries.
Yeah, we're going to get to a really great Parker Posey performance in a bit.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you like the Man Bites Dog.
I like the concept, and I kind of want to watch it.
Yeah, you're not... It's not like... I wouldn't say it's for... You don't care for like gore in horror movies, right?
No, I can see.
Oh,
I
no,
can
there's
watch gore.
There's other thing. Okay,
I can see gore.
Okay,
yeah.
You'll be
fine.
Okay with this movie then.
Yeah,
you'll be okay with this movie. The whole thing's in subtitles though, so I don't know. You know, you. And
oh
subs.
My god, can we stop
you
this
and,
rumor?
You in foreign films with subtitles?
Hey, I finally watched. You know,
you did watch Parasite eventually. Okay, I'm so proud of you.
I know. It took me 5 years.
Yeah, the way that Man Bites Dog goes about it, and the fact that it's not a comedy. It's a very dark, dark comedy, very black comedy, but, you know, it's more so a disturbing drama at best,
right.
Really. I think that's when it shines its best, or shines its most, sorry. So I like that we go with that. We're kind of changing up the pace a little bit, especially from, kind of an absurd movie like this is Spinal Tap, and then our second choice is, you know, a very disturbing Cannes Award winner, so... I think that works. So some other notable entries that I thought were worth mentioning.
From the 90s?
Yes. Two in particular. One called CB4 that came out in 1993 that stars Chris Rock. And the other one, Fear of Black Hat, which is 1994.
Okay, right.
These are two mockumentaries, one year after the other, about fictional hip-hop groups.
Nice.
Obviously, I've got to show them love.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a huge love for those types of movies. And then Drop Dead Gorgeous that came out in 1999.
Right, Kirsten Dunst.
That's right. Kirstie Alley, Ellen Barkin, Kirsten Dunst, Amy Adams in her first role, first film role.
Okay.
This is just a mockumentary about a beauty pageant in Minnesota. All of these...
It always takes place in a small town in middle America.
I kind of enjoy that.
And there
will be more of those the more we go on, but I think that that's such a good format, and it's ripe for comedy.
It's a sense that, you know, in these big budget narrative films... They only take place in like two places, and it's New York or Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then in mockumentaries, you have so much more, choices to pick from in terms of the rest of America.
Yeah. And I think it really hones in on very particular characters and how they act within a certain setting. Right. Finding like a very small town in Minnesota or Missouri, for example, like two of the examples that we've talked about so far. You can find very specific people and work within that to some really, really fascinating results. I think that we're going to cut to commercial break really quickly before we get into the 2000s. So
big one.
This is a big one.
We have a lot of clips for the 2000s.
We do, and we have a lot of movies to talk about in the 2000s. I think this one's going to be pretty hard to find a defining pick because you're very passionate about some of these movies.
I am.
I'm less so, but I still have my pick. So stick around for Outside the Frame. We're going to cut to commercial break, but we will be right back with our discussion about the decade-defining picks of mockumentaries from the 1980s until the current day. Stick around. We will be right back. .94.9 Radio Western. We are back with Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show. We are in the midst of our discussion about mockumentaries, and we are choosing our decade-defining picks from the 80s to the current day. So far, for the 80s, we chose This Is Spinal Tap, the iconic 1984 mockumentary. And then in the 90s, we chose the very controversial 1992 Belgian film Man Bites Dog. And now we're into the 2000s. And my God, the 2000s are really ripe for the picking.
They were hammering them out.
Yeah, this is where, you know, I mentioned that in the 80s, we had our defining one that everyone would kind of get inspiration from. The 90s is where it started to pick up. This is where they just went hard for it. They just really cranked them out in this year or in this decade.
In such different ways too.
100%.
It's not just the Spinal Tap format at this point. People are really expanding what a mockumentary is and trying it in very different formats.
I really like that. There's blends of different genres,
yeah,
of different storytelling formats. And so we'll get into how this kind of evolved. Some of these movies really did evolve the mockumentary genre in very interesting ways and in very different ways, depending on the movie that you get. So let's just go down the movies that we think are notable, and then we'll kind of choose our defining pick at the
okay.
end of it. How does that
okay,
sound?
Okay, yeah, that sounds good to me.
Okay, so the first one, right off the jump, by the way.
Year
right
2000.
Off the jump. Year 2000. We have one of what I think is one of the best mockumentaries ever made. So this might end up being the pick, but two of the best end up in this decade. So at least
yeah.
for my money.
Yeah, yeah.
So the first one we do have a sound clip for, and that would be the 2000 movie directed by and written by Christopher Guest, and that would be Best in Show.
Well, the first time we met was at this big dance, and I just thought she was the prettiest thing that I'd ever seen, and she was there with somebody else. She was very popular back then. She had dozens of boyfriends.
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah, hundreds.
I did not know that. Hundreds.
That is Eugene Levy there, who also co-wrote this movie.
Right, with Catherine O'Hara as his wife.
That is correct. Yeah, they both obviously star in this movie. This one also, of course, as we mentioned earlier, stars Parker Posey.
Yep.
In a fantastic role. Shout out to the braces she's wearing in
yes,
this movie.
Right.
Actually got real braces for the movie. Insane.
That's an absurd thing to do.
It actually is, but it pays off because it fits her character so well. It also has Fred Willard in it, Jennifer Coolidge, amongst others. This movie is, I think, where Christopher Guest really starts. I think this is his best directorial feature.
Yeah.
I think this is really, you know, he kind of started out on and started trying to hone his skills in Waiting for Guffman. And I think they really shine in this movie. I think this
right.
movie is so funny. In case you don't know, this movie's like a mockumentary, of course. It's a behind the scenes look into the highly competitive and cutthroat world of dog shows. again, an incredible concept right off the jump.
Right.
I think this movie really shines. Of course, it has great performances. It's got some really, really sharp writing in it. It is really good at portraying the most insufferable people who you would not want to share a room with at all.
I think what mockumentaries and particularly these type that Christopher Guest does is that he showcases, you know, because all films, I think, try to get in some way to understand human nature.
Yeah.
And you can really, it can really become dramatized in a way. And, you know, you have action films, you have all this where, like, it just becomes really big when really he takes something that's so hyper specific and just shows you what humans are like, what people are like.
Yeah. And especially in something as wildly niche as dog show competitions.
Yes.
Where you bring your dog, you enter them in, they do tricks, they do obstacle courses.
You can watch a documentary about crazy people.
Yeah.
And this mockumentary is showing you that, you know, really, most people are kind of crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you do stuff like this. It's like beauty pageants.
Yes.
You know, so we talked about Drop Dead Gorgeous briefly, but it's in that same realm. You know, like the dog moms and the dog dads.
Yes.
Same thing with beauty pageant, like queens and their parents as well.
Yep.
Just like that highly competitive, but like living vicariously through the being that they're entering into this contest.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that does this really well. The characters are beautifully, beautifully written. I think they're so funny. Obviously, you have some these actors, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, SCTV alum, right? And they're
right.
operating. The improvisation that they're doing in this movie is next level. Like some of the best that you'll see in film.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I mean, I assume that with a mockumentary, there is more, you know, opportunity for actors to improvise.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, and that is actually it. So obviously there is... In most cases, I believe that they do leave a little bit of room for improvisation, if not a lot of room. I
right.
know for This Is Spinal Tap, they did have a script, but They found that the script was actually getting in the way. So they just started just riffing and then letting that kind of naturally. And I think that that works, especially, I think that works better in a mockumentary format because it allows for it to feel more real and feel more like a documentary that it's trying to, you know, that it's trying to portray. So I think that being able to give people who improvise, and I think that's why some of the best ones are people who are good at improvising.
Right.
You know,
right.
it really showcases their talents and makes it feel more immersive and more real. This movie's great. I really suggest this movie. If you haven't seen Best in Show, it's a great look into, and especially because, you know, with the resurgence of Schitt's Creek, you know, coming out, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara,
He's
been around. Yeah, you need to know that he was, long before he was in American Pie, actually, this movie came out after American Pie.
Long before he was in Cheaper by the Dozen 2.
There you go. Thank you. you know, and long before Schitt's Creek, of course, he was doing some really, really great work. And this is one showcase of that. Moving on to 2003, we have another Christopher Guest movie. So back to back, this man is putting out mockumentaries. This one is about folk singers. It was called A Mighty Wind.
Right. So this was recommended to me.
Yes.
I have not seen it, though.
Yeah. I mean, for my money, I do. You know what? I haven't seen this one.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can't really say too much about it. If it is as good as Best in Show or Waiting for Guffman, I mean, that he holds a pretty high standard.
Supposedly, it's a better parody of folk music than Inside Llewyn Davis's.
Wow. Wow.
And that's a tough bar.
Because
Inside Llewyn Davis is like a secret parody. You don't actually know it's a parody when you're watching it.
That's high praise, yeah. Because it is satirical in nature, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a very sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah, it's a very sad satire.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
this one is A Mighty Wind is obviously played for more laughs.
Yeah,
knowing
yeah.
Christopher Guest, right? Pardon me. After that, we have one that Mike actually recommended a while ago.
Okay.
So Mike, I think this had to have been. I think maybe last year, or maybe the first year we were doing this.
Right,
maybe the
okay.
first year we were doing Outside the Frame when it was during one of our October episodes.
I think I remember this, right?
And so he recommended a movie called Behind the Mask,
right?
The Rise of Leslie Vernon. So this movie's about a film crew that follows around a serial killer in training. Sound familiar?
It does. It sounds very familiar.
Sounds very much like, you can tell, like, this movie had to have taken some inspiration from Man Bites Dog.
Yeah.
Now, the difference with this movie, Man Bites Dog was very realistic, or, you know, quote unquote realistic in nature. This one plays into that a little bit more, plays into, like, almost more of an homage to slasher
plays
films.
Plays into kind of the tropes that you would find in classic horror movies.
Correct. Yeah. So this one is, because in this movie's world, slasher film killers like Jason and Freddy and whatnot are historical figures.
Oh, that's funny.
Right. So it definitely plays into it. It feels a little less real, but it's still the format of a mockumentary and then kind of, you know, evolves past that from what I've heard. I have not checked this movie out yet. Sorry, Mike. I will do that. That is one of my plans because it actually is a fantastic concept, and I do plan on checking it out this October. So maybe we'll talk about it.
We promise we'll get our homework done.
Exactly. We'll talk about it in October because we've got a few. I'm sure we're going to talk about some horror movies next month for sure. And then following that movie came out in 2005. We have 2006, which undeniably
it's a big one.
It's a big one. It's a big one. It might actually be the. I mean, this is Spinal Tap is quite large in stature amongst mockumentaries, especially music mockumentaries. But the movie we're about to discuss, you could not escape it in the year 2006. You were 5.
Yeah, I did not watch this when it came out.
Yeah, I was 11.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, wow.
So here's the thing. I watched it when I was 11. Because I was still like that 10, I think I was around like 9 or 10 when I really started to become in love with movies.
Yeah.
So this was still when I was in that phase of really learning what movies were about and loving them. To be fair, probably didn't get a lot of the humor the first time around, but I ended up getting, I mean, I've watched it several times since then.
Right.
And the older I get, the more I can appreciate the satirical nature of it. I didn't really see it as a satire at first. I just saw it as like a dumb comedy at first. But you kind of lean, like, once you grow older and get a better understanding of the world, you find out the more satirical nature. I'm going on about this movie, and I have not even told people what it is yet. This movie is very nice. It is Borat.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh la la. Oh, we were. King in the castle, king in the castle. Have a chair, I have a chair. Oh, go do this, go do this. King in the castle.
This, Borat 2006.
Right.
This movie was directed by Larry Charles. If you don't know who Larry Charles is, done incredibly influential work on Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I'm a fan of both of those things.
Alicia. Yes. Worked very closely with Larry David. And this was written by a ton of people. I didn't want to put down, I think there's about 6 to 9 credited writers on this, including, funny enough, Todd Phillips.
I'm assuming it's because as they go along, it's same thing as improvising, people are just writing things.
Yeah.
As they're filming, as they're going along.
I would assume that's the case as well. That would make a lot of sense. I would assume that the main movie and screenplay and story were both written by, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen, who is who portrays Borat in this movie. If you don't know this movie, Borat, it stems from a character that Sacha Baron Cohen created back when he was doing the Ali G show. So, where he kind of did this shtick with a lot of people, the Ali G.
Yeah, yes.
He did it with Borat. He did it with another character that we'll talk about in a second. But you know, these people who go out into the street and are doing somewhat like almost like method acting, almost like performance art. You know, they're sticking to this character in real life.
It's the first time you interject the fake mockumentary characters into reality.
Into reality.
And see how people react around it.
Precisely. This is the first time we see something like this, which is fascinating that it took this long. But this is like one of the first big evolutions of the mockumentary that we start to see.
Right.
This movie, if you don't know, if somehow you don't know about this movie, Sacha Baron Cohen plays Borat. This is a Kazakhstanian TV personality who goes to the United States to report on what he believes to be the greatest country in the world.
Right.
And that's it, about as thin as you need, because the hijinks that ensues is absolutely crazy. This is one of the most defining movies in this genre, I'd say.
Yep.
I think it's a solid satire
of
the prejudices that Americans hold or held towards foreigners, particularly because this movie was 5 years post 9/11.
Right.
So particularly towards Middle Eastern people. I mean, it's part mockumentary, part prank show. There's a lot to dissect with a movie like this,
right?
In what it gave to the mockumentary genre.
I mean, obviously Johnny Knoxville does all his stuff after this. That's inspired. What did he do?
Like Dirty Grandpa?
Dirty Grandpa or something? Or is that the one with Bobby De Niro?
I think that's Bad Grandpa.
That's Bad Grandpa.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Johnny Knoxville does all this, but really, this is like the beginning of like YouTube social experiments.
Quite literally, yes. Like
all those bad social experiments we all watched growing up on YouTube, and people dressed up in costumes interacting with real people on the street and stuff. And so this is where it all begins.
And you see that a lot these days, especially like you go onto TikTok or Instagram Reels, and you'll see some, if you swipe long enough, give it like 10 minutes, you'll see some variety of this, of somebody pretending to be a character,
yes,
and trying to prank people who are, you know, very unsuspecting.
My dad loves to watch this guy who dresses up as an old janitor at a gym
and then proceeds
to like lift these like crazy weights.
Yeah, my brother-in-law loves that too. The guy who looks real skinny and then he goes up to bodybuilders and he's like, oh, can I move this? And he just lifts it up with one arm and he mops
underneath and then he puts the weight down. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like there's clearly a reason why this is – it's fun. You know, obviously people find humor in people's legitimate reactions.
Yes.
So this clearly struck a chord with people. This is the first mockumentary, by the way, that was nominated for an Oscar.
So funny.
For best adapted screenplay.
It's adapted?
Yeah, because it was a character on the Ali G show.
I guess so. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So very loosely adapted, but still counts, because even though it's an adaptation of the same character that the guy who got the nomination was ready.
I can see why it lost, though.
Yeah. It's kind of like Whiplash, you know?
Yeah.
Like how it was an adapted screenplay of
a short film
called Whiplash.
But also, didn't he just make the short film to like get the money?
Yes, he did.
To make the whatever.
A crazy loophole. But
yeah,
that's
whatever.
We can talk about that later. Borat was a cultural phenomenon.
Yep.
This movie has so many quotables, so many visual mainstays in popular culture. Like, usually with movies, you know, you might get a line or two out of them, but yeah, this one has like shots or costumes that are so...
The Speedo.
Yep. The banana hammock. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yep. The mustache with the tan suit.
Yep.
Just so much of this movie, pardon me, has infiltrated its way into mainstream culture. Very nice.
King of the Castle.
You know, like...
Wawa Weewa.
Dude, just the voice alone.
Yeah.
My wife. Yeah. So many...
Everyone's got an impression of Borat.
The amount of girlfriends that have had to listen to their boyfriends do
unbelievably
bad Borat impressions.
Their Borat impressions in the shower.
Yeah.
As they try to get ready.
As they're getting ready, debating if they should just leave and never come back.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, this movie is to this day unescapable. And I think that's kind of why it has to be mentioned amongst the highest ranking of mockumentary films.
Right.
I don't know what else to say about this movie that hasn't been said already, but truly, truly one of the most influential. We move into 2007 now, where I'm gonna let Ryan...
I'll be super quick about this because we're running out of time, but super quick.
Well, you know what? We don't have too many to get through for the 2010s and 2020s, I'd say. So
I'll be conservative with the time.
Okay, I appreciate that. If we can get back to it later on if we have time, but please take it away.
For 2007, we have a soundbite for this one too. We have the animated film Surf's Up.
I don't understand why everybody has to be so judgmental. I understand why my mom's judgmental. I think it's because she cares, partially. I think it's also partially because everyone else is looking at her like, hey, Cody's just a bum. Cody's this, Cody's that, Cody's this. Cody's me, bro. Let me be me. When is that going to start? Whatever tomorrow
brings, I'll be there. It's so good, man.
Oh,
it's
my
so
goodness.
Good.
Okay,
Surf's Up. Let's go.
Surf's Up, listen. 2007.
Surf's Up's important in terms of mockumentary films because it's really the first animated mockumentary film that we get.
Correct. I'm glad you brought that up.
And so that's just an interesting concept of itself, is that they take animated penguins who surf and they say, okay, instead of telling this as a straight up narrative film, let's do this through some kind of documentary, fake documentary, format. And it is so good. I mean, first of all, the animation for the time, 2007, gorgeous animation in this thing.
Yeah.
Truly, like, the water animation in it is quite phenomenal.
Only to be rivaled by James Cameron's work on Avatar, The Way of Water.
Yes. Actually, you know, that's what James Cameron was thinking about. He was like, how are we going to make the water better than in Surf's Up?
I get it, yeah. He's a competitive guy.
Listen, it is a kids' movie. Absolutely.
Through and through, yeah.
It is. It has kids' jokes in it. It's going to keep your kids entertained. I saw this as a kid. I loved it as a kid. I love it even more as an adult because really it is a great vibe movie.
Mm.
If you want to know how to live your... If you are going through a crisis and you want to know how to live your life, watch Surf's Up.
That's me, bro.
It is a movie that's all about... it's not about results and it's all about the process and it's about... just doing things that you like to do.
You know what? It probably hits pretty close. You love a good sports film.
Yeah.
So the fact that this movie is not only a mockumentary, but it also is a sports film
it
in nature. Because it's about a surfing competition, correct?
Yes. And it was really big in the surfing community. They got a lot of surfing voice cameos happening. They do a whole ESPN-style thing in it. It is like, if you're a sports fan, you'll love it. If you're a kid, you'll like it. If you're an adult, you'll like watching it with your kid.
This movie's got a stacked cast, too. Especially for the year 2007. It had basically everybody who is some... like, everybody who's everybody. Everybody who's somebody.
Shia LaBeouf.
The ever easy to work with Shia LaBeouf.
Of Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull fame.
That is correct. We have Jeff Bridges of The Vanishing fame.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Zooey Deschanel of...
Yes Man fame.
There we go.
That's a really...
I was struggling
one.
To think of a not big movie that...
Yeah.
And Yes Man was actually quite big too.
And who's the other fellow who plays the chicken?
Oh, John Heder.
Blades of Glory fame. I don't know. Is that one small enough?
That one's also quite big, but I love the hell out of that movie. But it's not what his biggest movie is,
yeah,
for sure.
Okay.
So
maybe the joke works.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a stacked cast, especially for a movie that came out in 2007. I mean...
Yeah, and we were talking about improv in mockumentaries as well. This is the first animation where usually animations are recorded where everyone goes and records their lines separately in their own vocal booth, and they don't actually meet the other voice actors. So a lot of times you go to a Toy Story premiere, a lot of the actors are meeting each other for the first time at the premiere. They'd never met each other before.
That's right.
But in Surf's Up, they put them all in the same room so they could riff off of one another.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting way to do it, because you would think that maybe there would be like, I don't know, like recording errors that could happen with that.
They'll fix it in post.
But they fixed it in post. Clearly it worked, because this movie was nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Feature.
Also, the sense that it is a mockumentary, so if there is an audio, you know, mix-up...
You can play it off.
You can play it off, because it's like, oh... These are actual penguins being filmed by a penguin film crew.
Exactly. There are two more movies I want to get into really quickly. I won't spend too much time on these movies. One of them is called Bruno. It came out in 2009.
Sacha Baron Cohen
movie about a gay Austrian fashion journalist who, surprise, surprise, ventures his way through America.
Nice.
This one is basically Borat, but with a gay Austrian journalist.
Yes.
And just, in my opinion, not nearly as funny. Borat felt like it had a point to make with what it was satirizing. This one doesn't.
Okay.
And it's just mainly shock value for what seems like what he's going for in this one. And didn't do nearly as well as Borat. The other one is, we mentioned this one, and I thought I wasn't going to put it on, but I thought it'd be worth a tiny discussion. A fantastic movie in its own right, but District 9.
Right.
So this movie came out in 2009. Great film.
Yes.
A really great film.
Really good movie.
However, the reason I didn't want to really include this was because it's not entirely a mockumentary, since it turns into a full-on narrative drama about a quarter to halfway through the movie.
Yes.
I still recommend that everyone check out District 9. It's great.
Yeah.
Defining pick. Decade-defining pick for the 2000s.
It's got to be Borat.
I think it's got to be Borat.
As much as I like Surf's Up.
I think it's got to be
Borat. It's got to be Borat.
So we'll go with Borat, 2006. Now we have the 2010s left. And if we have time, we could talk about some that have come out in the 2020s. But since the decade's not done, I don't think it's necessary that we really focus on it. But 2010s, I guess that we can...
I think we only have two clips.
We have two clips left. So let's start with the first one here that came out at the beginning of that. And that is in 2010. That's the movie I'm Still Here.
And... now, for the first time, I'm doing something that is, whether you like it or not, it really represents me. And maybe that's stupid to want to be represented, to care. I don't care. Not that. But I don't want to be, you know, think what you think about me. Hate me or like me. Just don't misunderstand me.
That is Joaquin Phoenix in the movie I'm Still Here. Joaquin Phoenix is the main star. He also co-wrote the movie with Casey Affleck, the director.
Right.
And so this is about Joaquin Phoenix as he announces his retirement from acting in order to pursue a career in hip hop.
Yes. So similar to Borat, but not so similar to Borat in the sense that it's happening in reality and they're getting real people's reactions to it.
That's right.
People that Joaquin Phoenix knows. The difference being Joaquin Phoenix is playing himself, or at least a version of himself that, does this ridiculous thing where he wants to quit acting and go into a hip-hop career.
Yeah, wildly meta, probably one of the most meta mockumentaries we've gotten. And, you know, this movie might actually be more best known for his stunt on David Letterman's talk show, where he was very avoidant the whole time.
Yes.
He sticks gum under the desk.
Right.
He has since apologized for that. I think it was just this year on Stephen Colbert's show.
Oh, he later went on David Letterman, though.
Yeah.
And he did go on David Letterman's show and said, I'm sorry about
that. Yeah, because he didn't let him know. He did not give him the heads up, I don't think, that happened.
Letterman was not in the know, but that was reportedly that was their plan, was that they wanted to go specifically on Letterman because they knew Letterman was going to eviscerate him.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Letterman did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He played to his strengths, and that was very smart of them to do that. In 2014, we have another fun mockumentary, another comedy that, you know, it's hard to describe, so we'll just play the clip here. This is the 2014 movie What We Do in the Shadows.
This is my torture chamber. I don't come in here often anymore. I tended to torture when I was in a bad place.
My thing was I would poke someone with implements. I was known as Vladislav the Poker.
This movie is, by the way, directed by Taika Waititi.
One of his first, isn't it?
It is one of his first.
Yeah.
It's his breakout directorial movie. Co-written by him and Jermaine Clement, who is also one of the lead stars of this movie,
yep.
Along with Taika Waititi as well. It's about a group of vampires who live together in New Zealand. Again, great, great concept. This movie spawned a very successful FX television show
that
just ended this past year, I believe.
Yeah, very successful.
Very successful. This movie was also quite successful. I think it was made on like a $1.6 million budget and made over close to five, maybe. So
it's pretty good.
Quite successful.
Yeah.
Quite successful. Not like a huge smash hit, but
it's a cult. It's a cult following.
It's certainly a cult classic.
I mean, it's definitely bigger now with the TV show out.
Yeah.
The TV show is very big.
And it falls into that category of, you know, like, about, you know, mockumentary about off like people who are killing,
yes,
or not people, but vampires who are killing people, but done in a very humorous way.
Yeah,
this one
yeah.
a lot lighter than any of the other, like Behind the Mask or Man Bites Dog.
Absolutely.
We get to 2016. Is there any that I'm missing right here? No, this would be the last one. 2016, which is my personal favorite of this list, and that would be the super underrated and underappreciated 2016 movie pop star Never Stop Never Stopping.
Before you knew it, we signed with a major label and put out our first single, Karate Guy.
One, two, three, four.
I like to kick it. I'm a karate guy.
Kia.
Karate Guy. You kidding me, man? That song changed my life.
Now I'm in a cowboy hat.
This
that was Nas, by the way.
That was Nas saying it changed his life.
Yeah.
This movie is hilarious. This movie pulls a lot from This Is Spinal Tap,
yes,
of course, but
yeah,
just kind of like brings it into the modern era. This movie's about a pop star named Connor For Real, all one word with the letter four. Connor For Real, played by Andy Samberg, who's going through the ups and downs of fame,
yep,
and celebrity amid the release of his brand new album called Conquest. This movie is wildly funny.
Yeah.
I think that it portrays, though. I think that this one, the way that This Is Spinal Tap was able to so accurately satirize the rock scene,
yep,
in the 80s, I think this one did it so unbelievably well for pop music,
yep,
in the 2010s. Really brought it into this, into how ridiculous and how serious they take themselves,
yeah,
and failing to realize the disconnect between them, the music, and the community that put them on. This movie's really funny. And so with that being said, what's our defining pick of this one?
You know what? I think we might have a difference of opinion on this.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go for 2010s. Do we have to agree on the same one?
We probably should.
Well, my pick is I'm Still Here, only because of the impact that movie had and the fact that people really didn't know if Joaquin Phoenix's career was ever going to recover from it.
Interesting.
From all the antics that he got up to.
Okay. I personally would go for What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I think amongst all the movies we named, the impact of that one has had a longer lasting stay.
That's true.
On
that's
the culture. True. So I don't know. They're both tough.
Yeah.
They are both tough. I love Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. Obviously, it underperformed at the box office. And it is really just This Is Spinal Tap, but for a new generation.
I think for me, maybe I'm Still Here takes it a little bit. For me, it's because it does something new with it, even though we have discussed that it is kind of similar to Borat, where it's in reality,
mm-hmm,
but it's an actor playing himself.
You know what? I'm not, even though the impact of that movie is not really huge, I'm willing to fall back a bit.
Then again, P. Diddy's in it.
And so is Casey Affleck, so.
What we do in the shadows then?
It's up to you, man.
All right, let's go.
What We Do in the Shadows is our 2010s defining decades pick. So just to recap quickly before we end off this episode, for our decade defining picks, for the 1980s, we had This Is Spinal Tap. For the 1990s, we had Man Bites Dog.
Nice.
For the 2000s, we had Borat. And then for the 2010s, we had What We Do in the Shadows. Thank you so much to everybody for tuning in to another edition of Outside the Frame. We will be back next week with Mike as we talk about his time at TIFF and our fall festival recap. So thank you so much. My name's Elijah.
I'm General Booty.
And we will see you all next week. Take care of yourselves. Until then.